For me, I was someone who believed that I had to be poor once upon a time to be a quote unquote real artist. I really believed in this starving artist mentality, and in fact, I glorified poverty. My creativity comes from me. It doesn't come from any external factors such as whether I'm able to afford to feed myself, which back then I wasn't. I was like borderline homeless. I should have been homeless. You absolutely do not have to be in debt in order to be a real musician. Welcome to the Being in a Band podcast. I'm your host, Monica Strutt, and I'll be your new band bestie as we deep dive into all things music marketing, branding, PR and release strategy, as well as the mindset it takes to succeed in today's modern music industry. I know the highs and lows of being a musician, and I've seen far too many of my talented peers give up on their dreams far too early in their careers. After working for years as a musician, professional digital marketer, and music journalist, I now help emerging bands break through the glass ceiling and reach the next level in their careers. Let's do this. What's up, and welcome back to the Being in a Band podcast. I hope you're doing really well. I'm sitting here on a very, very cold Melbourne autumn day. I can see this full moon just rising out of the blue sky. You know, when you can see the moon during the day, there's something so eerie and cool about it. But there's a full moon, I think, in a couple of days. So it's like pretty much full now. And the sun is going to go down in the next half an hour, I think. But I'm sitting here with a candle, sitting here with hot chocolate, because quite frankly, I've been so freaking busy the past couple of months, but the past week in particular, that I've kind of been putting off recording an episode for you. And I have a bunch of interviews that I need to edit and get up, but this one today, I just kind of felt like sitting down and chatting to you all, to be honest. So that's what I'm going to do. I really want to talk about money mindset today, but before I do, I have to tell you this crazy fucking story. So as I said, the past week in particular has been mental because I did go on a very quick kind of business trip to the Gold Coast, which is like our holiday sort of city here in Australia, up north in Queensland. And it's a small city and it's just the most amazing, whitest beaches that you've ever seen. Like, honestly, I'm not even a beach person, but I have to say Australia has some of the best beaches in the whole world. And people go to the Gold Coast because there's theme parks and the beaches and the nightlife and everything. And it's not too far either from Brisbane, which has a really, really good music scene these days. So I was up there for like a business trip. I was meeting up with my business coach who was hosting like this event and dinner, and it was amazing. Plus I got to see my friend Cassie and just escape the Melbourne winter for a couple of days. I was only there for two nights, but I kind of was taking a little bit of a risk because I was due to fly back on the Friday afternoon, and then the Friday night I had a show here in Melbourne. So I'd booked my tickets. I knew I was cutting it fine, and I was flying with Jetstar, which are like a budget airline, only because, I mean, I always vow every time I fly with Jetstar that I'm never going to fly with them again because I always have such a terrible experience. But I think I recall when I actually was booking the travel plans that they pretty much had the only flight at the time that I wanted to actually come back, because I wanted to arrive in Melbourne and go straight to soundcheck at the venue because the airport's not too far from Stay Gold in Brunswick where we're playing. So anyway, as I kind of alluded to, they're not the most reliable airline, but I booked them anyway purely for the time. And of course, I woke up that morning that I was due to fly out, and you know, the day that I was due to play the show with the Last Martyr, my band, and Jetstar had cancelled that flight. So not wanting to really take the risk again, I ended up getting a refund and ended up just booking with another airline. So I got to the airport with plenty of time to spare. I'd planned on working a couple of hours from like a cafe or a bar at the airport just to like smash through some work that I needed to get through because I'd been away the past few days. And yeah, I got there with plenty of time to spare and was doing my work, and finally it was time to board the plane. But when I went to the actual terminal, I saw that there was no plane there to board. And so myself and the other passengers were kind of looking at each other, looking around, and there was no one there working for the airline that could kind of shed some light on what was going on. Next minute, we hear over the loudspeaker that this system that Virgin Airlines, which was not the airline that I was flying with, had gone down. So the check-in system that Virgin uses had gone down, so they couldn't check anyone onto the flight and they didn't know when it would be back up and running. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm so glad I didn't book with Virgin. I'd booked with Rex, who I've never like flown with before. So I'm sitting there and there's still no plane. And finally, after, you know, a few minutes, a little bit delayed, the plane arrives and people start disembarking. I thought we were going to be able to board the plane. By this time, we should have taken off by this point. I think the flight was supposed to be at like 10 past five and landing at about 7:30 in Melbourne. We should have taken off, but we hadn't, and still no one is telling us, you know, if there's going to be a delay, or, I mean, there clearly was a delay, but how long it would be. And anyway, next minute we hear over the announcement system that, like Virgin, the check-in system that the airline that I was flying with was using was down, and this was not only a national issue, but it was also a global issue. So at this point in time, I had to message my bandmates and be like, hey, change of plans. I am definitely going to miss soundcheck, and it looks like there is a delay with the system here. I mean, I knew that I was going to miss soundcheck anyway when I had to reschedule my original flight, so I think I already told them, but I said, I'm probably going to make it after doors open. Hopefully it's not too much after, but I'll definitely be there, I'm sure, by the time that the set starts at 9 p.m. because they're working really hard on fixing it. So more time goes by, and still we aren't able to board the plane, and the staff are furiously typing on the computer, but still no one is telling us really what is going on. And at this point, I start to panic. It is nearly 6 p.m. and I know that it's a 2-hour flight to Melbourne. So this means that I would be landing well after 8 o'clock, probably around 8:30, and only have half an hour to like warm up, get changed, and get to the venue. So I'm quietly panicking and I walk over to the Jetstar terminal. And ironically, nothing is wrong with Jetstar's system. They use a different database. So I should have rebooked with them after all. But anyway, it's too late now. And eventually they say that we are able to board the plane. So I was like, thank God we're able to board the plane. I'll be there in time. Get on the plane. And because they're checking everyone onto the plane manually and they're doing like this manual manifest, I'm telling you now, it takes over an hour for everyone to get on the plane. So I'm watching people one by one, two by two, and the occasional family get onto the plane. I was one of the first ones. And I'm sitting there and half an hour goes by, 40 minutes goes by. And I called over the flight attendant and I was like, hey, so how many people are left to board? And is this flight full, or, you know, basically, can you give me some idea of how much longer this is going to take? And I'm really, really panicking at this point because I know that I shouldn't have taken the risk flying back from the Gold Coast on the day of the show. I mean, it would be a risk flying from Sydney, which is only an hour away, but let alone the Gold Coast, which is even further and even smaller airport. So I'm feeling so terrible at this point because the guys in my band must be so worried and pissed off at me. And anyway, the lady says that the flight is about halfway full. And at this point, I think we were like maybe 2/3 of the way to that point. And so she walks off and I continue to panic and I kind of feel myself like getting really upset. Next time she comes over, she's like, hey, I think we've only got 10 more people to board. And at this point in time, I'm just like crying my eyes out. I just had so much like built up anxiety and pressure and I just felt so fucking terrible. And she's like, oh my God, I feel so bad. Is there anything I can get you? And I was like, a box of tissues and maybe some alcohol. And she's like, okay. So she brings over this box of tissues and about 20 minutes later, we end up taking off. At this point, obviously, it's out of my control when I'm going to arrive. But at the last minute, I asked the boys if we can swap set times from 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. because we did not even take off till 7 o'clock. So it means I would be landing around the time that we were due on stage. So that wouldn't have worked. So thankfully, the other band, shout out Future Static, were okay to swap set times. But I'm on this plane. The flight attendant, they were only accepting cash, so I couldn't even buy myself a drink. But the flight attendant was just so lovely. She's like, don't worry, I'll pay for it. And fully just bought me a red wine. And I was like, bless you, you're an angel. So I'm on this flight and I'm trying not to panic. I feel a bit better, you know, when you just like shed some tears and like release that energy and you just like feel a bit better. I don't know, I'm not a huge like public crier, but you know, sometimes it's just got to be done. So we get to almost at the point where we're going to have to get ready for landing, and I start getting ready for the show. So I first of all go to the bathroom, and I bought some stockings that I was going to wear on stage. I bought that at the airport, like at this chemist at the airport. Thank God they had some stockings there, because my outfit just would not have looked right without them. And let me tell you, if you have not experienced putting stockings on in an airport bathroom, it is one tricky motherfucking thing, because not only is it like a tight space, but also like the floor is pretty gross. I mean, like I would assume that it's like pretty gross. So I'm trying not to like put my bare feet on the floor. So I put on my stockings, I go back to my seat, and I start like putting on my fake eyelashes. That same stewardess that felt sorry for me and took pity on me, kind of, we had a bit of a moment where we had to laugh about the like hilarity, if that's even a word, of the situation. They moved me up to, I thought I was being moved to business class, which I think is what I posted about, but they moved me to the seat behind business class so I could get off, be one of the first to get off at least. She walked past me putting on my fake eyelashes, and it was a pretty funny situation. So anyway, they say that anyone with a connecting flight can get off first, and also they gave me special permission to get off first as well. So as soon as the doors are open, I am hurriedly running off the plane down the corridor, and everyone that's got a connecting flight turns right out of the corridor into the terminal, and I turn left towards the exit, and a couple of nice people like yelled back at me because they assumed that I was going to the same place they were, and they were like, hey, it's this way, are you going to Adelaide? And I was just like, no, I'm fine. And I just continued to run out of the airport. At this point in time, we'd landed at 9:20, so remember, my set time is at 10 p.m. So once we landed, I had 40 minutes to get my butt to the venue. So I'm running through the terminal, and it's definitely 9:30 by this point. I did have checked in baggage, but I'm like, fuck it. There is absolutely no time for me to wait to get my bags. There's nothing super valuable in there. I'm just going to ditch the bags and just pray that it's in lost property the next day and pick it up then. So thankfully my partner was waiting for me to pick me up, and the security guards kept telling him to move on because he'd been parked in the same spot for too long. And he's like, no, she's coming, I swear. And he's calling me being like, hurry up. And I'm running in these like big combat boots out the airport, like down the street up to the pickup area, which is in the car park at Melbourne Tullamarine Airport. And I finally get there and I jump into the car. I feel like I'm about to have an asthma attack, and I don't even really suffer asthma. I get in the car and I'm just like, don't talk to me. I start like just ripping off my clothes, and thankfully I had my stage clothes in the car. I nearly packed them in the suitcase, but thank fuck they were in the boot. So I like grabbed my shit out of the boot. I'm like getting full on like stripping down in the car as my boyfriend's like driving down the highway towards the venue. It is now like 35 past nine. So I've got 25 minutes to go, and it's going to take 20 minutes to get to the venue. So I already had my stockings on, which was a big help. I was rifling through the bag that I'd taken for my stage clothes, and I was like, what the fuck did I even pack? I had like this leotard and these bike shorts and this like other top. I was like madly putting like plaits in my hair because I've been vibing that lately. I pretty much had my makeup done. I just needed to touch it up because I did some of it on the plane. And we're still racing down the highway. I've got the majority of my clothes on by this point, and I start just doing vocal warm-ups. But I'm so out of breath still from the panic and the massive like run through the airport and then through the really cold Melbourne winter air to the car park and pickup area that I can barely even do like lip trills. And yeah, so every 5 seconds I'm like looking at the map and my partner's like looking at the map and my bandmates are like, how far away are you? And I do that Facebook tracking thing in the group chat where they can check like where I am on the map and see me, I guess, making my way there. It gets to 10:02 and the map says that we'll get to the venue in like 4 or 5 minutes. So I was like, yes, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. My boyfriend pulls up in an alleyway that's right next to Stay Gold. I run out of the car, out of the boot. I grab like a box that I know has a bunch of like throat lozenges because I'm going to need everything that can possibly be put in my throat in order to make my voice sound good. Not everything, but you know, I had a box full of like throat lozenges basically without sounding really fucking dirty. So I get in and of course we have this check-in system. So you have to check in everywhere you go and scan the barcode or the QR code and check into every venue so that there's contact tracing just in case someone has COVID. And of course my app isn't working. The security guard has to do it on his app and I have to type in my details manually. So that's one extra minute gone. Then there were these two girls in front of me paying for the show, talking to the door girl. And they were talking about, you know, the change in time for the bands. And I was like, well, I'm really sorry about that, but I'm actually on right now. Can I just go in? And the girl's like, don't worry, I won't give you a stamp. Just like get on in. At this point, I reckon I've got like 3 or 4 minutes to go. I'm busting to pee, by the way, the whole time. I run through the venue. Thankfully, I played it twice before, so I know how to get to the backstage area, side of stage. And I, you know, show this security guard my wrist because I didn't even get a stamp. And the security guard was just like, whatever. She showed me her wrist. I'm sure she's fine. And just as when I get to the side of the stage, I open the door and I fall ass over face into the dressing room and land very dramatically sprawled out at the feet of not one, not two, but three fabulous drag queens. And it was one of those moments where I saw their sparkly shoes first and all of a sudden I was on the floor and I didn't really know how I got there. But I landed like pretty hard on my knees and my knees were just like absolutely shattered. Like I tried to stand up as soon as I fell down and I just like couldn't even stand up. And I was looking up at these drag queens who had these like massive wigs on and costumes and they were doing their makeup because it was kind of like this queer alternative party night. So they had heaps of different performers, not just bands. And so I was looking up, they look at me like I'm some sort of fucking roadkill. I was literal drag queen roadkill. No one helped me up and they just continued to do their makeup. And because I'd fallen on my knees so hard and I couldn't stand up, all I could do was kind of crawl along the floor because at this point my feet were still hanging outside of the dressing room and the front half of my body was inside of the dressing room. So I'm kind of like crawling like a caterpillar and shimmying along the floor, pushing my big case that has like all my throat lozenges and my microphone in it along the floor and pushing my handbag along the floor and like squirming my way inside. And again, still no one stopped to help me. I finally get my composure after literally, I'm pretty sure, seeing stars fly around my head and I sit down on a chair and I see some bottles of water and I have a drink and I'm like, oh my God. Oh, I forgot to say, when I fell on the floor, I just awkwardly yelled up at the drag queens, I've arrived. I don't know if that made the situation better or worse, probably worse. And yeah, my bandmates were in kind of the room next door, which leads directly to the side of the stage. So they didn't hear the commotion at all. They're still thinking that I'm on my way. And as soon as I regained composure, I was like, fuck, I better tell them that I'm here. I poked my head around the corner. We've got 1 minute to go on stage at this point in time. And I gave them the biggest hug of my life. I know that they were probably so angry at me and so anxious that I wouldn't turn up, but you know, they were happy to see me. I was pretty happy to be there and see them. And I was like, do I have time to pee? And they're just like, just go. So I ran to the bathroom, got back. We went on stage a couple of minutes late, but we still had plenty of time in the scheme of things. Our set's only like 27 minutes anyway in a half an hour slot. So I did have a couple of minutes to spare. And anyway, our intro starts playing and we're like, get on stage. I don't even have time to process whether I can walk, let alone headbang and run around and perform. It's quite an active show that we're doing these days. But I just get on stage and obviously I have so much like pent up energy and anxiety that I feel like I just completely unleashed. And thank God the crowd was so warm, so engaged, and they really gave me the energy that I needed in order to get through the set and get through the evening. It was so much fun. In fact, I would hazard a guess saying that it's probably the best show that we played so far. At least I really enjoyed it. I don't think that I sang perfectly or anything. I still didn't really have time to warm up, but purely from an energetic standpoint, it was really, really fun. And as I said, the crowd was like super engaged, and I just feel so lucky that that horrible situation and what had been a really long, drawn out afternoon and evening, I was so happy that it was over, and I was so happy that it was that particular show with that audience that we were playing, because I think if we'd have been doing any other gig, yeah, that energy just like wouldn't have been available to us, I suppose. So yes, lesson learned. I will never be cutting it that fine again. I mean, in an ideal world, I thought I had it planned out perfectly. I knew that it would be some sort of a risk, but I don't know, the way that I think, I'm always like, she'll be right. You know, it'll all work out. I'm not really available for things not to work out. And anyway, I made it. It was very stressful. I have bruises on my knees and I couldn't walk for like 2 days afterwards after falling and playing a show because, I mean, the previous night before the show, I'd actually gone out and tripped on my friend's step because it was dark and I may have had a couple of wines and was in heels. And yeah, I'd fallen on my knees literally the night before as well. And that morning, I just remembered, I also banged my right knee on the corner of the guest bed that I was staying at my friend's house in the Gold Coast. So my knees were absolutely fucked. But anyway, they're recovered now and I'm going to try and go to yoga tonight. But 20 minutes have gone past of this episode so far. We haven't even gotten to the topic, but I just had to tell that story because it was just fucking crazy and everyone's messaging me going, rock and roll. I hope you made it. And it did not feel like rock and roll at the time, but I guess looking back, it's a pretty wild story to tell. But yeah, never again. But today what I wanted to talk about is money mindset. And let me ask you, is money an issue in your band? Do you always feel like things are really expensive? It's really expensive to be in a band and your bandmates and yourself have this like awkward relationship with each other and with money. And it's always awkward when you have to pay for things and maybe things aren't split equally. And there's like a little bit of, I guess, maybe a subtle resentment bubbling under the surface, but you're trying to tell yourself that it's all good. As long as we pay for the things that we need, you know, it doesn't matter. We're all working towards the same goal. Everyone's in a different financial situation. Is that you? Well, I cannot tell you how many clients I've worked with that have been in this exact position. And as someone who has also been in this position where, you know, money is a very awkward subject to talk about, maybe you need to pay for something like artwork, but you volunteer on doing it DIY, even though you're not a graphic designer because you're trying to save the band money instead of having one more expense. Maybe you aren't splitting things equally at the moment and there's one person in the band who can just never fucking pay for anything, but maybe when it comes to ordering Uber Eats or going on holidays, they suddenly come up with the money. If this sounds familiar, as I said, I have been in this situation and it is not fun, but there are definitely ways that you can overcome this issue, even out the playing field, and never stress about money again. I'm going to be sharing with you some hot tips in this episode that will ensure that money never becomes a stressor in your band and that you always have enough to pay for the things that you need to pay for. So before we dive in to the actual episode, make sure you are subscribed. Make sure you are following me on social media. I'm Monica Strutt everywhere. And if you want to see the visual reenactment and play-by-play of that crazy story of me trying to get from the Gold Coast to Melbourne to play a show and then walking on stage just as our set time was beginning, then head to my IG stories highlights and you'll see a highlight called shows. And yeah, you can see the whole story unfold literally before your eyes. So yeah, definitely go check that out and let me know if you do as well. Come send me a DM if you've heard this podcast episode and then you go and check out my IG story highlights and watch that scenario. I'm really glad I documented it because yeah, as I said, it was wild. But yeah, this is a situation that I've been in before where money has been kind of an issue in my band. Now, this has been an issue in a couple of bands, not really so much my current band as we put in some parameters right away as soon as we started to kind of mitigate this issue. It's not to say that it's always been stress-free, but you know, for the most part, it has been. But this was more sort of a problem in a couple of other bands that I've been in, particularly when I was a lot younger. And it's also been a massive issue for many, many clients, like probably about 75% of the clients that I've worked with. And let me remind you, I've worked with 50 clients now, privately and within my membership, probably more than that. Over the past 2-3 years, I think about 3 years now, I've worked with 50 bands and musicians and companies on growing their online presence and their release strategy and, you know, generating a fan base and presence within the scene. So yes, 70% of the acts that I've worked with have had some mindset issues around money, and they didn't really have very many parameters in place to deal with money effectively within their bands. For me personally, this was a massive issue when I was a lot younger. So when I was first starting out in bands, when I was in my kind of late teens, early 20s, I would say, my bands that I was in, most of them had a system where people just pitched in money to the band account or to someone's spare account. It's been mine in the past, but not always. Yeah, it was kind of this arrangement where people would just pitch in what they could afford. And I think this came about because I may have been a student at the time, or some of my band members were students at the time, and everyone worked different jobs and different hours. In fact, I don't think I was a student, but I think I was like pretty much jobless. I was living in like King's Cross and just like bumming around and trying to make a music career happen when I was like 21. Crazy life lesson, but that's for another story. But yeah, we had this situation where we would just pitch in, and when I got a job, I ended up pitching in more, but it never really evened out. And I remember I somehow got this credit card and we had to pay for extra recording days or recording hours or something. And it was recording hours, not recording days. And I just like picked up my credit card, paid for it on my credit card. And another time we were on tour and we hit a wombat, which is like a giant digging mammal here in Australia. And their behinds are like, it's basically like hitting a boulder. Anyone that's toured Australia and hit a wild animal will know that wombats are like, they can total cars. Thankfully we were in a van, and we weren't going like crazy fast because it was at night. But yeah, we hit a wombat and we needed to repair the van the next day, and I just pulled out my credit card again. So I've definitely been in a lot of debt, like couple of $1,000 for the bands that I've been in. And, you know, at the time I was happy to like help out my bandmates. And then it got to a point where sometimes I wouldn't even get a thank you, or I just do stuff kind of under the radar and not really tell anyone, and then get pissed off at why no one was pitching in at the same level that I was. And I've also been on the other end of it where band members have gone off and like paid for things and then gotten pissed off that not everyone's pitching in equally. So there has to first up be a massive, massive effort in communication and transparency with all band-related costs. Now, even if your bandmates literally cannot afford to pay for something, you need to put parameters in place. As much as you want to record, as much as you want to buy merch or buy a van or something for your band, you need to work out an arrangement that everyone is happy and comfortable with. And of course, it can build resentment as well if you can afford something but your bandmates can't and you feel like they are holding you back from your career because you can afford it, not them. So, you know, that really comes back to who you select as bandmates. And honestly, like, never get in a band with someone that doesn't have some sort of work, even if it's like casual work, but some sort of form of income. But if you have just, you know, gone with someone because they're a good guitarist or whatever, and you're already in a band with them, then you need to really sit down and have a serious conversation about how seriously they're taking the band. So not splitting stuff equally and not having transparency where money is concerned are the biggest kind of no-nos when it comes to managing money within your projects. So what I would advise to put in place is, first off, you need to have that conversation. Are all the band members in your band taking music as seriously as you are? Because as I said, 70% of the bands that I've worked with have had issues around money, and a portion of them, it's usually one person in the band that's like paying for everything and that's hired me to consult with them and that's doing all the admin, and that's why they've hired me, right? Because they need fucking help from someone who knows what they're doing. And then the other band members kind of just plod along, turn up to rehearsals and expect that that is enough. And let me tell you, that is not enough. And if you need to, maybe you'd like to start with sharing this podcast episode with your bandmates. And another one that I would share is an episode called Do You Actually Believe You Can Make It? Which is a conversation that I had with my friend Curtis Duart. It's one of the last episodes, if not the last episode that came out before this one. And it really speaks about the level of seriousness, and the self-belief required to actually put money on the table and invest in your band. And the reason why a lot of bands don't invest in themselves is because ultimately, subconsciously, they don't believe that they can actually make a career out of music. So you need to make sure that all your bandmates and yourself are on the same page. The conversation is the first step. Secondly, you need to be planning minimum 6 months in advance and planning out all of your costs. So how many releases do you want to do? What is your budget for each release and for all the releases total? Thinking about, of course, marketing and PR and video clips, not just the actual recording itself, because a lot of musicians and bands budget for the recording and maybe the video, but then they forget to budget for PR and marketing. And then they just drop the video out there or the music out there, and then they wonder why no one actually hears it. So you need to be putting away money for marketing and PR. I know that you know this because you're listening to the Being in a Band podcast, and I go on and on about it all the time. So budgeting at least 6 months in advance is really, really important. Planning and budgeting, I mean. And if you need help doing that, then that's probably what my one-to-one single sessions are for. I do 90-minute one-off sessions with bands, and a lot of the time it is doing exactly this. It's planning out the release strategy, the longer term plan, so 6 to 12 months, the budgeting, the marketing and PR, and basically getting the bones of the release together. So we can cover that in 90 minutes. If you're interested, hit me up at contact@monicastrutt.com. I've actually got quite a few of those in the week coming. So yeah, another reason why I wanted to get this episode recorded and out there. So you've had the chat with your bandmates. Everyone's on board and wanting to take music seriously. You've planned at least 6 months in advance. You know exactly what releases are coming out. You know your budget per release, how many videos you're doing, and basically what your strategy is to get your music out there. I would also then next suggest that you have a band bank account. Now, my band has a bank account with the National Australia Bank. We did some investigating, and the business account that we have seemed to be one of the lowest fee options, but I'm pretty sure they're much of a muchness. And for a really long time, we used someone in the band's bank account that they weren't really using, and we had a band agreement in place and we all trusted each other, so that was absolutely fine. But I also have heard of many, many instances where, maybe the trust was there, but it shouldn't have been there. And, someone that's in charge of collating the money and storing the money, even if it's in an account that they're not really using, you know, sometimes it can go walkabout, it can go missing. So having a separate business bank account, and it is a little bit of effort to set up, and you do need at least some sort of band agreement, or in Australia an ABN, in order to set it up so that everyone has access to the statements and there can be no funny stuff. There is that level of transparency that we talked about. It just takes away all the tension from the situation. I mean, I haven't even checked my band's bank account in like over a month. In fact, I can't even log into it right now. So it is there though, if I was to go find the login details and log into it. And then once you have your band bank account, I also suggest putting in money every single week that will cover your costs. So you can calculate how much each band member needs to put away to pay for all of the things in the 6 months. And everyone can, yes, of course, go and save separately. But, you know, it's more tempting to spend money when it's in your own bank accounts. But once it leaves your account and goes into the band account, then basically, there's no way you can get access to that again, unless, of course, a massive emergency came up. But basically, once the money is paid into our band bank account, it ain't coming out unless it's for a band expense. Now, just like I mentioned earlier, I do have a lot of experience both in my own old bands and with the clients that I've worked with, of different band members putting in different amounts to the shared bank account. And this is all well and good, and it's kind of rock and roll and poetic to have that much trust and that much faith in the band. But over a long period of time, over the many years that it takes in order to make a profit from your band, resentment can build and people can lose track. And honestly, it's my personal belief that if someone is not invested literally, they're not invested emotionally or with their time. So I've seen it time and time again where usually the people that are putting in the least amount of money into the band bank account are doing the least amount of work. And it's just one of those things. And you'd think that maybe they should be doing more work than everyone else, but really, how do you quantify that? And they may not have the skills anyway to do, the majority of the day-to-day things that a band requires. So I find that over time, what usually happens is because someone is putting in less money, they feel like they can't have as much of a say as maybe some of the band members who are putting in more money, and then they end up drifting away from the band. So it can even come from externally, I guess, how the other band members who are putting in more money are treating them, or the expectations. You know, if I'm putting in more money, then that means I'm more invested, right? And that means I should be able to have more of a say. And then the person or people putting in less money kind of feel a bit excluded. And then they also get comfortable and feel like they can put in less and less money and make excuses. Whereas usually the people that are putting in more money, they want it more, and they're usually hustling or eating noodles, which I've done many, many times, in order to pay for band stuff, and are just way more invested emotionally and looking towards the long-term benefit. So I would advise making sure that the money that you're putting away per week is even across all band members. All band members are putting away the same amount of money. You also need to have someone to track everything. And if someone forgets to put in money one week, which happens all the time, then they just send them a private message and be like, hey, don't know if you realized, but you skipped this week's payment. No stress, just make it as soon as possible so we don't lose track. Before we continue on, I'm so excited because today's episode is sponsored by Bandzoogle. Built by musicians for musicians, Bandzoogle is an all-in-one platform that makes it super easy to build a beautiful website and EPK for your music. All the features you need for a professional website are already built in, including hosting and custom domain name, dozens of fully customizable design templates, and let me tell you, they look super modern and fresh, tools to sell your music and merch commission-free crowdfunding and fan subscription features, mailing list tools to grow your fan list and send newsletters, social media integrations, and live support from their musician-friendly team 7 days a week. Being in a Band podcast listeners can go to bandzoogle.com, that's BANDZOOGLE.com, and try it free for 30 days and use the promo code Being in a Band, all one word, to get 15% off the first year of any subscription. That's bandzoogle.com with promo code Being in a Band, and I've left it linked below. So they're pretty much my main money tips. And I also want to tell you that you have to get over the awkwardness of talking about money in your bands. If it's like a weird thing for you right now, unfortunately, it's something that you're going to have to work on. And don't feel bad about it. A lot of people get weird talking about money. And I think I'm just not weird at talking about it right now because I've had many, many business coaches who have specifically coached me on this topic. But yeah, I mean, like everyone, I used to be awkward about it once upon a time. And that's why I felt the need to put in more money than everyone else into my band, at some points in time. So I want to remind you that if you're in a band that wants to make a living out of music, you have gone into business with several other individuals. You are in a business partnership, so you have to be able to talk about and be transparent and have good communication around the topic of money. And if you're someone who has maybe thought things in the past like, being in a band is so expensive, you don't make money in music, then I really urge you to look into changing your mindset around this topic of finances, because you can get way more comfortable with the topic of money and it will impact not just your band situation, but it will also impact the rest of your life, the other areas of your life. For me, I was someone who believed that I had to be poor once upon a time to be a quote-unquote real artist. I really believed in this starving artist mentality, and in fact, I glorified poverty. And I mean, I can't believe that we're actually circling back right now, but I mentioned that when I was about 21, I lived in King's Cross in Sydney with this guy that I was dating who was also a musician, and I had quit my job because I was just not happy. It was my first job out of uni and I quit it because I was treated appallingly. And we lived in this studio apartment in this like red light district in the city of Sydney. It was like this fast paced, well, not really that fast paced fast, but the world outside was like fast paced and there was gigs happening all the time within walking distance. And like, there were like hookers walking around and strip clubs. And it was just like the hub of the nightlife in Sydney. It's kind of like, I don't know, like you're the Sunset Strip in LA or something like that. So I lived there and I purposefully, I believe, got myself and manifested this exact situation because I glorified at that time of my life, Sid and Nancy. I watched the movie. I knew all about Sid Vicious. And if you don't know the story of Sid and Nancy, it's like Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols and Nancy Spungen, I think is how you pronounce her name. Basically, they were like heroin addicts and they had this, but they seemed to have this like
crazy, like movie, dramatic, like love story, rock and roll love story. And that's what I wanted. And that's ultimately what I ended up getting, minus the heroine. So I thought that I had to put myself in like situations where ultimately I ended up with like really severe depression because I wasn't working and I kicked out the guy and I lived by myself and eventually got myself out of that situation and got a job that I ended up staying at for like almost 6 years before I moved to Melbourne. And I got myself into that situation because I wanted songs to write about. And I thought that I had to be poor to be a real artist. And I thought that I had to have a lot of drama in my life in order to be a real artist. And yeah, I got myself into situations like that. I had a lot of very rock and roll experiences. I still hope to continue to have a lot of rock and roll, like fun experiences, but also some very rock and roll dark experiences that I don't wish that I didn't have, because ultimately it's made me the person that I am. And I learned some fucking serious lessons that still serve me to this day about boundaries and, you know, what I expect out of a partner and self-worth and everything like that. But also I learned that my creativity comes from me. It doesn't come from any external factors, such as whether I'm able to afford to feed myself, which back then I wasn't. I was like borderline homeless. I should have been homeless. So you absolutely do not have to be in debt in order to be a real musician. You do not have to be in debt to be a real musician. And even when I got myself out of that particular situation, I still manifested quite a lot of debt in my life. I was putting in more money to my bands than anyone else, as I mentioned, at a lot of different points. I would often use my credit card to pay for band things or to pay for things that I thought that I needed. I would go and party every weekend and during the week as well, which is fine. Don't regret that. But I always had a lot of credit card debt. I got my credit card in like 2011 and I'm pretty sure I never even paid it off properly until like 2017 or something like that. And even then I got a new credit card and I only paid that off like last year. So I still had a lot of like debt around me for like many, many years. And it has been in the past, I would say 3 years since I started my business journey, that I really started to change my mindset around how I thought about money. I realized that money isn't good or bad. It's just a resource to, I guess, exchange for goods or services. It has no emotion attached to it whatsoever. It can cause emotions in people, but only if they let it. So I started to let go of this concept that I was just, you know, someone who was always going to be a poor artist and all my money goes towards my band and blah, 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 blah. I started to let that go. And I started to imagine what sort of life I would have if I enabled money to come to me. And I remember specifically driving home from the job that I first had when I moved to Melbourne. I worked in Brighton for a fashion label. I was doing their marketing. And on the way home, I would have to drive all along the water back to the west side of Melbourne where I live. And I would be saying to myself, and it was so hard and it felt so like strained and a lot of resistance around it. But I would say to myself, I make $1,000 a week. I make $1,000 a week. And that seemed crazy because at the time, I think I purposefully got a job because I was so burnt out. I purposefully got a job that was only like 3 days a week. So I was probably only earning like $450 a week plus picking up some extra work here and there, maybe a couple of extra $100 every now and then per week. But saying that over and over was the first step in reconditioning my mind that I had the capacity to earn more money than what I was actually earning, and reconditioning my mind to be comfortable with that. I think ultimately that's what it is. In fact, I didn't even notice it happening because I conditioned my mind so much that it wasn't even like a crazy thing. I remember I was making over $1,000 a week at one point, and yeah, it took me like many, many weeks to even like calculate and notice because it just like, yeah, it was so weird. It just happened. So once you start becoming more comfortable with the concept about having more money, then you can really start to make better decisions, because a lot of us self-sabotage. You know, when I had that credit card debt, which I did for nearly a decade, when I had that credit card debt, I basically, wasn't a huge one. It was only like $2,500. But to me, it seemed absolutely massive at the time. But the thought of like paying it off, I wanted to use my money to like go have fun on the weekends and put towards my band. So I would only ever pay like $50 off at a time, like just here and there. And like, it would barely cover the interest. And that's why I had the credit card for so long. I was probably just paying off the interest. And every time I had, you know, some spare cash on the credit card, I would go like buy myself lunch because I was like, oh, what's another like $15 for like sushi or a coffee or like whatever. I would literally use my credit card to like go buy myself lunch out because I thought, what's the point? I wasn't paying off big chunks anywhere. And yeah, just, it was because of my mindset of, you know, keeping myself in debt because I just really couldn't imagine. I was so accustomed to having a credit card in my life that I just could not even imagine not having that credit card debt there. In fact, side note, and I know this podcast is getting long and it's kind of zipping and zagging all over the place, but I paid off my credit card, the new credit card. I had to buy a new computer with a credit card when I was working like part-time, I think. And I really, really needed a computer for my business. So after I like got rid of one credit card, the one that I had for almost, you know, 7 years or something like that, I kind of got another credit card like straight away, only a couple of months later. And when I eventually did pay that off, which was last year during COVID, when my business started growing massively because I had the time, I actually felt kind of lost and I felt uncomfortable when I paid off that credit card. And my immediate instinct was like, oh, what do I do now with my money? Because I was so used to like, I was trying to pay that credit card off as quickly as possible. So I was like putting like, again, it wasn't like a huge debt. It was probably like $2,000, but I was still used to putting like a couple of $100 of each paycheck onto that credit card. And all of a sudden that's not what I was doing with my money anymore. So I know it sounds crazy, but when you have conditioned yourself for so long that this is just the way that something is, and that I'm always in debt and any spare money goes towards my band, that was literally my thoughts, then yeah, it actually felt very, very uncomfortable for, I would say, many months after I paid off that credit card. And I would have to remind myself, you know, I would think to myself, oh, what if I just got another credit card? Then I could afford this, this, and this. And I'm not saying that credit cards are bad. If you have a credit card debt, you know, what you can do is like, this is comes back to the conditioning. One thing that you can do is you can tell yourself that debt isn't good or bad. As I said, it's kind of like money and debt. It's like, whatever. Debt is just a choice. I heard this from Amanda Francis. Debt is just a choice to pay something over time. And that has really served me in my life. As I said, it saved my ass when I needed a new computer and was only working casually and couldn't afford one outright. And it also saved my band. At one point, when it was just me and Ben in the band, we put our PR on my credit card because it was just the two of us and we weren't really expecting to have those costs shared just between the two of us at the time. And because we had a changeover of lineup, not because people refused to pay. But yeah, so my credit card has definitely saved my ass, but the feeling of being debt-free was so, so foreign to me that it felt uncomfortable. And I thought, wow, for the first time in my life, I might be able to actually have savings. And so I guess I began like trying to put my money towards savings. And eventually I'm now comfortable with not having any debt and also having savings. So long story short, if you feel like you have some of the money issues that I've spoken about in today's episode, the first place I would start is to read a couple of personal development books on this subject. So I'm going to just go into my Audible for a second and I'll be able to jog my memory of some of the books that really, really helped me. I mean, the first one that I don't even have to look up is called You Are a Badass at Making Money by Jen Sincero. So that's Jen Sincero. You guys would love her. She's a former punk musician. She's like such a badass. She swears and she talks about money mindset in a very humorous way. And she tells a lot of stories about her own like starving artist mentality. And she was a writer as well, making like next to nothing for her work. And now she's like a freaking millionaire. And she did it, you know, at the age of 40, I think she had all of this debt, and within only a couple of years, she completely changed her mindset. Guys, it all begins in your mind. As I said, even when I paid off my debt, I still felt like I had the debt because I just wasn't used to not having it. And my first instinct was like, how can I get back into debt again? It's because my brain was wired, you know, in that way and in that manner. And, you know, the neural pathways in my brain had been firing in that certain way for so long that it's really fucking hard. So it has to start with your mindset. So You Are a Badass at Making Money by Jen Sincero. There's also a book which I haven't read, but it's on my list. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a bit of a classic. It's not as modern as like You Are a Badass at Making Money, but I've heard that that's really good as well, and I'm definitely going to read it. Another book that I've read, this is more to my women and women identifying people in my audience. It's for anyone, but like it really probably resonates more with like feminine energy, which guys have as well, but you know what I mean. I feel like women resonate with this author more. So it's called Get Rich Lucky Bitch by Denise Duffield Thomas. So as you can tell, I really like books with swearing. And let me just see. I'm just going to scroll down and see if there's any other books that I would recommend on this subject. There's a lot of books like Girl Code by Kara Orwell Labor. Again, more for women. That's not just about making money, but it does have like a lot of mindset and stuff in there as well. So yeah, those are probably the main ones I would recommend. So again, You Are a Badass at Making Money by Jen Sincero. Get Rich Lucky Bitch by Denise Duffield Thomas. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Again, I have not read that, but I've heard that it's really good. I mean, there's a bunch of books out there. If you have any other suggestions, maybe drop them inside my Facebook group, Music Marketing and Mindset for Heavy Bands and Musicians. I would love to hear your suggestions. And then the next place, once you start kind of switching your mindset, and you got to be open with this, guys, even if you're not like a woo-woo type of person, just be open, because a lot of this is based, I mean, it's all based in science, but you may not like be familiar with the way that it's explained in a more like esoteric sort of spiritual concept context sometimes. So yeah, start there. Next, if you want a hardcore work at this, I would love to actually have a session with you and your band again to work out your finances and your admin and how you really structure your band on the back end. Because if you have cracks with the way that you work as a team, then honestly, you're just going to self-sabotage yourselves when it comes to your releases and your music, no matter how good your music is. You know, I've seen it before, like bands with great music, they don't have the internals right, they don't have the teamwork right, and they kind of just fall apart at the seams because of it. Because ultimately, as I said, the band is a business and it's not just about the product, it's about how the business operates on the back end too. So if you want to have a one-off 90-minute session, I don't take very many slots of those, usually only like one per week. So contact me at contact@monicastrat.com. DM me on Instagram if you're interested in booking in. We can organize, I guess, your plan for the next 6 months as well. Figure out your budget and everything. It'll be enough time for us to do that. I would love to talk about money mindset and organizing from a very practical, but also, as I said, from a mindset perspective, how your band and yourself deal with money. So you can definitely do a solo session with me as well. And we can kind of attack this from looking at the different components of your life, not just the band. So this episode turned out a little bit longer than planned, but I hope that it was enjoyable. As I said, this is a huge issue that I've come across many times, and I guess this is kind of a sister episode to what I was talking about in the last pod episode with Curtis, all about why bands don't invest. I feel like this is kind of like the groundwork that you need to do. Really asking yourself, you know, you can journal on this. When I think about the topic of money, what are the thoughts that come to mind? What have my parents told me about money? You know, have you heard money doesn't grow on trees, or we can't afford that? You know, are those types of sayings that you grew up with, and has that influenced your mindset to think that money is a scarcity? For me, I run my own business now, and one of the most liberating things is being able to literally almost decide how much money I want to make per month. If I want to make more money, I take on another client or I launch a new product. And it doesn't have to be hard, honestly, guys. I work like 4 hours a day, most days. Sometimes I work for like really, really long hours, but only if I feel like it or, you know, it's absolutely necessary. But most of the time, you know, a lot of my work involves, I don't know, it's hard to tell because it's fun at the same time. But it's so liberating just being, knowing that if I want more money in my life, then I just decide to make more money and it doesn't have to be hard. I don't have to feel weird about it, because ultimately the more money that's in the hands of good people, because that's another thing, money doesn't change people at all. It just amplifies people, kind of like social media. The more money that's in the hands of good people, the more positivity can happen in the world, the more philanthropy, the more charity donations, but it just enables you the freedom and choice to live a happy life, and then you will be able to be a ray of light for the people around you. It's not all about giving back to charity. You can totally give back to yourself and just become like a happier, more fulfilled person, which will ultimately radiate into the world. Thank you for listening again. You've been listening to the Being in a Band podcast. Don't forget to follow me on socials, Monica Strutt everywhere. Please subscribe. And if you're interested in booking a one-on-one session, I now have some spots open for the next few weeks or month or so. Hit me up, contact at monicastrutt.com or DM me on Instagram. I would love to chat about this further with you. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to the Being in a Band podcast. If you liked this episode, please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an upload. And if you really liked the episode, make sure you leave me a 5-star review. If you aren't a member already, come and join my free Facebook group, Music Marketing and Mindset for Heavy Bands and Musicians. It's a business savvy community of musicians just like you. If you want to work together, all the details are available at monicastrutt.com, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.